Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 10th of September. Hey, it's 10-10-10. And I'm recording at 9:16 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights of the last week, as this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. First, stock markets, very steady action generally, with those that are had been leading, tending to move further ahead into new high ground for the year and sometimes all-time highs. And those that had been range-bound, that's the vast majority of them, moving up to the upper side of those ranges and some breaking up out of them. Now, in terms of long-dated government bonds, it's been a rout. And that continued in here today. I should have also said that stock markets were pretty steady in here today, quietly steady in here today. A lot of them were closed in Asia for a religious holiday. Government bond prices, that is, have fallen steadily throughout the week. And in currencies, the resources currencies have been stronger. That's been, I think, a main feature, but the dollar has been weak generally, not least against the Asian dollar index, and it's been soft against the Latin American dollar index. And most currencies, though, have been in a generally range-bound situation. Dollar's a little bit firmer against the yen here today, but the rate still only 84.17 yen. And precious metals, well, gold got up and had a look at the higher side of its range, as did silver, and both have eased back a little bit from those levels. Today, gold dropped down to 1236.80, but then closed back and closed up on the day at 1246.10. The industrial metals were quite strong, led by tin and nickel, tin breaking up to a new high for the year. But we saw some little bit of profit taking in here today. And the grain and bean complex has really been quite firm. Overall, particularly corn. Sugar has been strong. Orange juice has firmed, although it's still range-bound overall. Cocoa has been weak. Okay. Oh, crude oil. Gosh, last but not least, crude oil surged in here today. 76.48. That's up 2.23. Natural gas is also firmer as well. Okay. So what's going on overall? Well, in terms of global stock markets, anybody who follows the price trends has got to be impressed by the action that we've seen against a background of very bearish sentiment. But I would argue, and I think many subscribers would argue, that bearish sentiment was a good contrary indicator. The high growth markets, those are the Asian sector, the South American markets, then followed by resources producers generally, have all done extremely well in here. Fortunately, they are all Fuller Money themes as well. In terms of overall background information, interest rates remain low. Yes, they've moved up somewhat in the stronger economies, but those countries are keeping them lower than they might otherwise do so because of the weak U.S. Economy, and also because U.S. interest rates remain rock bottom low. And that is causing inflationary pressures in the stronger growth areas. As I said yesterday, it's really a tale of two different worlds. Here, strong growth, very much performing stock markets, some inflationary pressures. That's in those Fuller Money themes, particularly in Asia. And then we get to Japan, the United States, Europe, the OECD countries, for the most part, and we see a very different tale. We see deflationary pressures or disinflationary pressures, and we see very slow growth, and stock market performance has lagged, but it has improved overall. In looking at the charts, which I always find so useful, I think I would describe it as a situation where stock markets rebounded very rapidly in 2009, in the second quarter of 2009, when people realized that the collapse wasn't going to be quite the disaster that people had actually feared. Really, because a number of countries never even experienced a recession. And so stock markets recovered very, very sharply, got overextended, and then moved into a multi-month, over a year in some instances, ranging consolidation of those earlier gains, with uncertainty over what was happening with the U.S. economy or fear over what was happening with the U.S. economy, exacerbating that trend or extending that trend sideways. But again, monetary policy remains accommodative. The stronger growth in the progressing nations is helping most of the OECD countries to avoid a double-dip recession. And stock markets are firmer generally because it's been quite a reasonable time for corporate profits growth. Profits growth has been the one shining light in here for the OECD country stock markets overall. Now, that growth is going to slow down as growth has slowed in the second quarter. And one of the reasons why growth has slowed is because a lot of the stimulus programs brought demand forward. So people spent today what they would have spent in the next quarter or the next half year or next year. So inevitably we see some slowdown, and we are seeing now the U.S. administration, Obama administration, announcing lots of infrastructure programs. Well, those are certainly needed. But what probably is needed most of all is a cycle of capital expenditure in the United States and other Western economies. Companies, the big cap multinational companies, can certainly afford to do that, but they're taking a cautious approach overall because these are unusual and difficult times. A point that I've mentioned, I think an important history lesson, I've mentioned this on a number of occasions, is that when a severe credit crisis has occurred, and look to the Asian financial crisis of, was it 1997, I believe, it takes about 5 to 7 years to recover from that. So therefore, we can expect a slow growth future over the next 3, 4 years in the developed, so-called developed economy, Western countries. But that's hardly the end of the world. And companies that are leveraged to the global economy, the bigger multinational companies, once again, will really do quite well. They're benefiting from soft currencies, and they're able to sell their products in the rapidly expanding, progressing markets. But for the real growth and the real performance, we want to be in those progressing markets. And that's what I've done, and it strikes me as an attractive proposition here today. In terms of long-dated government bonds, I think that, well, I've described it as a bubble, and If I'm right in that, then we're not going to see the yield lows that we saw last month. We're not going to see those retested. Instead, yields are going to move back up fairly quickly, up towards, well, for 10-year, U.S. 10-year, I would say back to that 4% level or just about. I think that that really could happen, possibly before the end of this year, although that would be an extremely sharp move, but not long after. I would expect to see that certainly in the first half of 2011. And if it doesn't occur sooner overall. And I think that will generate some additional demand for stock markets, which I expect to have a good performance in the fourth quarter of this year and beyond. Looking at the commodity markets, I think that they are another, the industrial commodity markets at any rate, are another indication that growth is going to be better than most people expect overall. It doesn't mean I'm expecting any kind of quick recovery in the West. I've said several times in this broadcast already, not to mention all the previous ones, that it would be very, very slow. Think in terms of the 5 to 7 years on average that it takes to recover from a severe credit crisis. That's the situation we face in the West. But there is some growth. This is not double dip, and there is very strong growth elsewhere, and that's putting upward pressure on commodity prices. So I'm just saying that commodity prices are just reinforcing, industrial commodity prices are reinforcing the fact that the progressing markets are growing quite successfully, and that the developed markets are not quite so bad as people feared would be the case overall. There are exceptions like the so-called pigs markets and the sovereign that have the sovereign debt problems within the European Union. Now, among those industrial commodities, I think we can expect at some point next year, I would think. Well, I think a market such as tin that will take out its high that we'd seen. I think it was back in 2008. Copper, I think, will certainly see a further challenge of its all-time high. I would expect pretty solid gains from the metals generally. The only industrial commodity that may just stay range bound and quite weak is natural gas, because there's a lot of supply, and I don't think that situation is going to change all that quickly. Crude oil, I suspect, will edge higher, and it's been range bound really for quite some time. In an area mostly sort of in the 68 down to around 68 on the lower side and up to the mid 80s. And I think we'll see that. I think we're seeing crude oil move back from its recent dip down to 70. And I mentioned to you that it's at, well, it's 76, 59 here right now as I speak in late trading. I think that will push higher, back up over 80 into the low 80 level. But at some stage, over the next 12 months or so, I do expect to see further gains in crude oil. Now, one of the reasons I hadn't mentioned previously behind today's jump, there was a pipeline leak, a pipe that goes, I believe, from Canada into the Midwest to refiners, and that has been closed temporarily to investigate and repair at least one leak, and that's put some upward pressure on the gasoline prices. But the big theme here, and because that's a temporary problem, the big theme is really strong demand in the progressing world, and we have flat demand in the developed world. And I think the demand in the progressing world can only increase. And that's a theme and a reality that we've seen over the last good many years, and I think over the last decade at least, and I think it'll continue throughout the next decade. The agricultural commodity sector is the one that perhaps offers the best short-term prospects for speculators, and also the most dangers in terms of future inflationary pressures, because some poor weather conditions have lowered yields, not least for wheat, but also corn supplies are down. The crop is again, the USDA revised down the U.S. corn crop here today. That was something that had been forecast by one of your brethren who is a specialist in this market, and I wrote it up not long ago, saying that the corn wasn't going to be anywhere near as good as forecast, and that was due to the hot weather that had been experienced at nighttime in July and in August, which prevented the kernels from bulking up. The sugars move up from the roots into the kernels in a good season when weather is relatively cool at night. It can be very hot during the day, and that's fine. That doesn't cause any problems. But the plants really do require cool weather in the evenings, and that's what they usually get, but that's what just what they didn't get this time around. And so that's lowered corn crop estimates. It's quite clear that the USDA works on a gradualist policy. They don't, I get the impression that they don't have all that many people who are monitoring the data. So they basically have a few people monitoring a lot of other people's data, and then put out forecasts which are graduated. There may be some rationalization in the background that they don't want to upset the markets and cause too much volatility in terms of prices. But the trend is for them, with this current crop season, is for them to be lowering forecasts for the most part as we go forward. Now, what that might mean is that we could see if there are any further weather problems. For instance, the Russian winter wheat crop is really on a knife edge here in terms of whether they will be able to both plant seeds in time and see those seeds germinate. They needed rain to soften the ground, and they also needed sufficient rain so that the seed would actually germinate before the cold weather sets in. Now, it's a close run thing here, but the risks are that the winter wheat crop will be damaged as well. That's the Russian winter wheat crop I'm talking about, of course. And that will be damaged as well, putting additional upward pressure on those markets. If we see prices for rice continuing to move up, they're still relatively low, but the trend, the medium-term trend, short to medium-term trend, is now to the upside. And if we see strong gains there, that will create havoc in the Asian region and many other parts of the world overall. So this is shaping up as certainly an area that needs to be watched. It's an area of short-term opportunity, but it's a situation that could become really potentially quite serious if prices move up on anything like the scale that we last saw back in the first half of 2008. And if we get food price inflation, that will put additional upward pressure on interest rates, and it will be a headwind for stock markets, and I would think it would hit bond prices hard, pushing up yields. So that needs to be watched. What about these currency markets overall? Well, I think it's the same story back to the fore here, the same long-term story. That is that the progressing markets, they don't need weak currencies as much as the OECD stock market countries rather need weak currencies. Most of the OECD countries have soft currencies generally. That's the euro, sterling, US dollar. But the exception to that is the Japanese yen. And Japan really does need a weak currency, and the government's been fairly ineffectual, pathetic really, in terms of dealing with this problem. So I've said almost daily, all they need to do is to say, okay, we're going to print a vast quantity of our currency, but they're afraid to do that, afraid they might be condemned by someone or whatever. And they're very concerned about the next election that's coming up. It's next week, I believe. So that is still very much a problem for the Japanese stock market and obviously corporate Japan, because their export earnings are being considerably eroded by this unnecessarily and overly strong Japanese yen. Japan is one of the countries that needs a weaker currency more than most. So the hard currencies, I think, are for the most part Asian, but don't expect huge gains in here over the next number of months. Because they've already seen quite a reasonable appreciation. Also, the resources producing currencies, which have higher interest rates, I'm thinking of Australia, for instance, and Canada to a lesser extent, those currencies are likely to remain firm on a relative basis overall. Will gold remain the strongest currency, or at least store of wealth of all? Probably. It probably will. And I would continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt while the gold price stays to the left of that trend mean represented by the 200-day moving average. And it's comfortably to the left here right now. It's not overextended. What gold is slightly overbought in the short term, having rallied back up to the higher side of its range where we saw those downside key day reversals in June. And so it would be surprising if we didn't see gold back off in range a little bit after reaching that level. But the chances are that it will then break higher in the not too distant future. And that might well really should push other precious metals higher as well. There's a lot of talk about silver perhaps getting a late to catch up move, that would be possible. Palladium is still one of the stronger ones overall, but chances are if we get any kind of decent move in the gold price that they'll all push higher. I don't expect gold to explode upwards at this stage. I think probably it's like more likely to be just a steady grind to the upside. Which keeps a nice, orderly, reasonably consistent overall upward trend. That's what we've really seen for some time, and I think that's probably the best bet overall going forward. Although I am on record having said years ago that this is a secular bull market for gold, and most secular bull markets end in a blaze of glory. I think that will happen to gold, but that's probably several years down the road. And on that note, I wish you all an exceptionally good weekend. All the best.